You should have your Bibles open to Proverbs chapter 2. We're going to do some things here to kind of cap off today's lesson, talking about the kind of paths that you're going to have to be determining that you're going to take, and how sonship prayer is really has a basic bearing upon all of that. And what we're going to wind up doing then on Wednesday, and I don't know how much we're going to be able to get done on Wednesday, but it'll probably take several Bible classes. I'm thinking probably four or so. But what I want to do is, when we look at that 139th Psalm this time, we really want to talk about it in light of what we now know, that we've got this information down. We're able to operate with two major features of sonship decision-making skill. We have at least four, actually five, but we've got at least four identifiable major features of godly love and charity that are things now that make it so that we're not just tenderfoots when it comes to dealing with this, but we've actually moved along a little bit in the pro in pro well, maybe we are tenderfoots, but we're not totally empty sons. We have something that we can operate upon in every facet of our lives, just as David was so marveled with the way in which God encompassed him. Thou compassest me about. And that's what this information has been doing, and the way God designed it to work, so that even though some things may not be applicable every moment or every situation you're in, there's not an area of your life that isn't touched with wisdom. There's not an area of your life that's not touched with justice. And so some decisions can be made and paths can be taken. That's nothing, though, compared to what it's going to be when we get to Romans chapter 13 and verse 8 down through verse 14, when it comes to receiving the instruction of judgment. And you're going to have to begin to think about things that you've never, ever thought about before. Things like the works of darkness. Things about having to go out and have this whole new vista open up to you that you've never really even operated in up until that point, which is having to deal with the adversary, with Satan and his policy of evil. And when I say Satan, I don't mean that you're going to go, hunt down Satan and you're going to grab him by his shirt tail and you're going to what? In fact, you will probably, chances are, never deal with him personally, so to speak. Because Paul talks about that we wrestle with principalities and powers and mights, dominions and spiritual wickedness in high places, all this kind of thing. But you're going to be confronted with his policy of evil in a way you've never been confronted with it before. And you're going to be told and enjoined there that you're going to cast off some very particular works of darkness. And you're going to intelligently know what they are. And what exactly they are, and why those six are exactly mentioned. Why those and no others? And there's accuracy in all of that. But when it comes to casting them off, he doesn't tell you how to cast them off. There's some courses of action you're going to have to, as a son, determine to take when it comes to those things. And when it comes to being able to make judgments about godly love, doing no ill to his neighbor. There's some specificness to the word ill, but there's a lot of latitude in how that's going to, and you're going to see that judgment, and even in equity is going to have far more instruction, but there's room to take the information you learn and say, and I'm not saying this that we pick it up out of its context, but it's designed to be carried into other circumstances and situations. It applies in many circumstances and situations, always within its context, but it is used, it has multifaceted uses. And some of that can be seen here in wisdom and justice, but not nearly the way it's going to be seen in judgment and equity. And so, because of that, you were alerted before you ever began your sonship education. When you were clear back in, all the way back there in the beginning, when we started out in the table of contents, and all we were doing was in phase one, and we were just in sonship orientation and in sonship establishment. Before we even got to receiving the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, you were exhorted by your father back here in Proverbs chapter 2 that there was going to be times and instances that were going to arise where you were going to do what Romans 12, 1 and 2 said. In proving what the will of God is, you're going to have to choose a path to take. And the father's not going to come along and say, come here, take that one. No, he's going to let you as an adult son and daughter be presented with a situation just as his son was in his earthly life here on this earth, the Lord Jesus Christ, and be able to use what is in his inner man, like I showed you before, that issue of, all right, in light of what I now know, and this is kind of where your sonship prayer life is going to go. It's like we were talking about there with Epaphroditus and the mercy ministers that ministered unto him, and you're going to be the hand of God that intervenes into circumstances. I don't mean that in a way of intruding into somebody's privacy, but you're the messenger. You have in your lungs and your mouth, you have the information they need. And oftentimes it may be a believer who needs information. And like we were talking at the break, the majority of the time, and by the way, that is expected. And as this dispensation of grace has gone on, and you see what the Apostle Paul says in the letters to Timothy about how the evolution of the ungodliness of this world is going to take place, and it's going to permeate the believers, it's going to permeate the churches, and it's going to be something that's characteristic even of believers themselves that get all wrapped up in this kind of thing. And it's going to get more and more and more difficult to be able to talk to somebody. But you're also going to acquire more and more skill to be able to do that. But to be able to sit down with somebody and at least present them the information that they need. And it may get rejected. That's fine. It may get rejected. 9 times out of 10, it probably will. But the thing you've always got to remember, and this was hard for me because I was such an arrogant person who thought, well, I'm a pastor, you know, there's no other job on the face of the planet that's got more authority than I've got. My authority comes right from God. And all this kind of, you know, I harbored all these ideas. You know how arrogant I used to be and in my angry period and all this kind of thing. And I used to think, well, buddy, you need this and you need that, and if you need to be saved, you need to look at Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, and for by grace are you saved through faith. That's a good verse, it's a great verse, there's nothing wrong with that. But what I realized was that God had ordered his word because he created the inner man. He created your spirit, he created the soul, he knows what works there, what fits there. He knows what will exactly fit the socket, so to speak, that is designed to receive the particular words that he has on the page. And that's one of the things you learn in wisdom. The last thing you learn is be not wise in your own conceits. Don't try and conceitedly come up with your own idea or imagination and say, well, I can't imagine that this is going to work. There's got to be something else they need to hear. No, what that lost person needs, Ephesians 2, 8, and 9 is fine, but what his inner man needs is what's sitting in Romans 1, 2, and 3. That's what he needs. And a skilled ambassador of Christ is able to come along and determine exactly by what they're listening to come out of that person's mouth. They can pigeonhole them, and I mean that. They pigeonhole them exactly where they're having a problem or a hang-up or a snag in one of those 7 volitional testing points that are in the book of Romans, in Romans 1 and 2, and be able to exactly know what they need to hear and leave it at that. And whether they like it or not, respond to it positively or not, if they totally reject it, or even worse, if they just look at you like a blank canvas, like, and just walk away, that's what their inner man needed. I can hear coming out of somebody's mouth whether or not, even if they've rejected it, that word had an effect. You can hear it come out of their mouth. There's an unbeliever, he's a Jewish unbelieving lawyer. And he used to be on all the talk show circuits. And whenever the issue of God or the Bible came up, man, he was always, you know, he was about as leftist as you can get. But if you listen to him carefully, somebody has gotten to him with the gospel. Or he would not say some of the things that he says. It has pricked his heart. And he knows that information. And it's done its job. He's rejecting it. He's holding the truth in unrighteousness. But it's been done. Probably somewhere back even in his Jewish heritage somewhere. I don't know. But that's a son has got to be able to know that I have information they need to hear. And I'm not going to try to imagine it that I should say something else. That's what they need. It may not go down well. And I certainly can have skill to be able to present it well. But somewhere, someplace, we have to stand at the firing line and say, this is unavoidable. We're going to have, I'm going to, you know, if you're coming to me and you're asking me, here's my answer. And you're going to give them the unvarnished truth of it. But that's what that human heart needs to hear. You know something. Therefore, what should I now do? And that's going to be a very important segment of your sonship prayer life. That in light of what I now know, what should I now do? And I did this first session. I'm doing it really for the sake of you who came in. But then, in light of that, are you doing that, fill in the blank? Or are you saying that, fill in the blank, because my father taught me that? That's what my father taught me. It's not my imagination. I'm not reordering his word. I'm not taking it out of its context. I'm not doing something just simply by tradition because our church has always done it that way. Are you doing it that way because that's the way your father taught you? And by the way, that's something that I'm making adjustments and alignments to in my life all the time. I find myself violating that issue all the time. That I'll say something or do something and then I'll realize, oh, my father didn't teach me to do that. Why am I doing that? Why am I saying that? Why am I celebrating that holiday? Is it because my father taught me that? A lot of things along those lines. Well, anyway, let's go to 51. This information that you know now makes it so that when we look here at Proverbs chapter 2, and let's look carefully at a couple of things here, in view of what you now know, look back on these things and see if now you realize where some of your sonship prayer life is going to be going when it comes to having information and now putting it to use and being the arm through which your father is going to use it. Once again, look at verse 6. He says, "For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths, plural, of judgment, and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path." Now, especially there in verse 8, do you notice that all that's said there about what the Lord does? Most people will read those verses and they do what so often folks will do. They will either reverse words or they'll superimpose an idea on the text that isn't there because it just is almost natural to do so. And when you come down, and again, there's a lot of things that we've gone over in detail before about this. I'm just picking up a couple of issues before we get to the 139th Psalm. It says, "He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints." All right? He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. To use that little exercise I'm always involved with, the way most Christians read that is to read it in what it doesn't say. And if you're careful with it, it doesn't say what occurs in most people's mind, most folks' mind when they read this. When they read it this way. "He chooses for you the paths of judgment. He tells you the way of his saints." That's not what that says. But that's oftentimes the way it's taken. He chooses your path of judgment. He tells you what the way of his is all about. It doesn't say that, but that's the way most people take it. In fact, that's the way most people take the whole idea of the leading of the Spirit, the whole idea of God leading me. If you flip back there in that 139th Psalm, you'll find that David talks about and extols the fact that God's hand is upon him. He talks about for that verse 5, "For thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid thine hand upon me." Well, heavens, all you got to do is take that one verse out of its context, and what you've got is, what you should be praying for is for God's hand to be upon you, that God's going to just shove you down the right path. And sometimes if he can't shove you, he'll kick you down there. I know of one old boy who was preaching at a tent revival, and this guy at the very back of it got so what they called slain in the Holy Ghost that he came screaming up the sawdust trail. He had a picket fence up there. He dove over the picket fence into the choir, and everybody was appalled by it. And the preacher, without missing a beat, he just stood up there and he says, no, they were going to throw him out. He says, "Leave him where Jesus flang him." Sometimes it's just not God's hand is upon you, but Jesus is flanging you. I could get some amens out of a story like that in a lot of churches. Just go where Jesus flang you. That's not a verse that says he's going to flang you. It's not a verse that says he's going to push you, or that he's going to grab you, or that he's going to haul you down a trail, or whatever he's going to do. Look at it very carefully. It says, "He keepeth the paths, and he preserveth the way." Now, who chose the path? Look at it carefully. "He keepeth the paths of judgments and preserveth the way of his," what's the last word? Saints. So who chose the path? The saints did. You did. That's what's going on in sonship. That's especially what's going to take place when we leave these two decision-making skills. And why, even in the table of contents back there in Proverbs chapter 1, it was stated in such a way that made it at least occur in your thinking that there's a bit of a difference. Now, not that they're disjointed, but there's a bit of a difference between wisdom and justice and judgment and equity. And there is. There's a bit of a difference. And the bit of that difference is that here you have things so well spelled out for you that this is clearly your basic fundamental instruction in wisdom. And here's the things that as a son are applicable to the way your father thinks, lives, and labors. And here's some things that are very clear-cut issues of justice, and they touch every realm of your life. And this is the way your father thinks, lives, and labors in connection with him. But when you get to judgment, like I said, judgment is going to have a smaller amount of information, but it's going to open up incredibly vast vistas of the way in which you're going to take it and utilize it. And that means you're going to be choosing paths. And by the way, this shouldn't be something that you should be setting there. And if it is, I'm not saying this to be critical of you. I'm saying that you need then to bolster up some information before you ever get to this point. But you should not be sitting there thinking either I'm afraid, I'm scared, or two, I'm reluctant and I'd rather have my father doing the choosing. If those thoughts ever occur to you, you have not been properly educated and properly understanding and appreciating your sonship orientation, sonship established. In other words, you got some real problems in Romans 8, 16 through 39. Or even 15 or 14 through 39. Because as a son, you should be champing at the bit. You should be straining. This is what I've wanted from the beginning. To be able to stand as my father would stand with his mind and his heart in me and be able to make decisions and almost want to come up to him and go, up, 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 up. You almost want to put your fingers on his lips and say, "Don't say a thing. Don't say a thing. You stay right here. I'm going to go and do this." And then you choose your path. And you look back and you say, "This is the one, right?" And he's standing there saying, "Yep, son, that's exactly the path I'd have taken." And that's the kind of training that is necessary to be utilized in his business and operations in the heavenly places. To be able to put in charge of running that business, that magnificent creature. Well, he is the one that, or, that then was going to keep that path. There's some, and he's going to preserve that way. But the truth of the matter is, it's up to you to find and choose the paths of judgment. And there's paths plural. Judgment is going to be one of the biggest aspects of your whole life. That's where the bulk of your decisions are going to be made, in judgment. But it's also up to you to know the way of his saints. The Father provides, once those paths have been chosen by you, he comes along and provides for them to be kept. And he makes it so that the way can come along and then be preserved. And that's all built into the curriculum itself. That's as you go through the curriculum and it unfolds, what you started out down as a path of judgment is going to be kept by further education in that curriculum that I'm not getting off of that path. That's the path, and the further I go down it, the more it gets fortified, the more it gets kept. It's safe. It's exactly where I need to be. It's exactly what my Father would be doing, and all of those things are built into the curriculum as you go. The temptation, and that's why Paul will constantly talk about, he talks to the Corinthian saints there, he talks to the saints oftentimes, and talks about that you faint not. He talks to the Philippians, faint not. You've chosen, you've got a path, and your Father is keeping it. You've got a way, he's preserving it. The temptation is going to be to say, this isn't working. And that temptation is going to come from external issues. You're going to get people, circumstances, life itself, and then as you get further on, you're going to get the additional issue of the satanic policy of evil that's going to come along and always be talking trash to you. Always be saying, that's not the way to do it. That's not the right path. That's not the way a Christian would do. We've got to coexist. We've got to this. We've got to that. We've got to be, you know, link arms with every other religion on earth. They're all fine in their own right and blah, 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 blah. And there should be no separate. And you're going to, the temptation is going to become, at first, it's not that big, but it's going to become intense and intense and intense. And it's the doctrine that comes along with it as the intensification occurs that keeps it and preserves it. So that you won't get off. I always remember when Tim and Chris went to Mammoth Cave down in Kentucky. I've never been to that one, but I always remember the story they tell about the path that they have to take through there. And there's tremendous holes if you get off that path. And I think they were saying that Chris or Tim asked the guide, "Well, what happens if the lights go out?" Well, if the lights go out, you stay put. Otherwise, you'll wander off the path. And he said, if you wander off the path, all we'll hear is, "Help!" And he said, we'll never be able to recover your body. So everybody was like, I'm on the path. I'm staying on the path. No wandering off. Well, it's dangerous to wander off. But what I'm after here again is that the curriculum itself is designed by God to be able to keep you from the opposition that would occur of staying of leaving the path of the temptation that's going to be there to leave the paths of judgment and staying on this proper way. In fact, verse 10 here and following, when you go on down through this chapter, goes on to focus upon that with the activity that comes along called the evil man and this strange woman. You're going to have a real allurement to get off of those things. And this again is something that is almost exacerbated by the times in which we live, in which, heavens, folks, people bring up the issue of homosexuality today. Well, it's just as big of a sinful problem. Look, sexual immorality is sexual immorality. Homosexuality and lesbianism is just one part of it. But It's like, well, everything else, you've accepted everything else. And basically, that's the way the majority of Christianity seems to be. Like, you've accepted the fact that the only way in which people ever get married anymore is, what's the old adage that before you wear the shoe, before you buy the shoes, you have to try them out or something like that? So the idea is that you live together. That's not a biblical idea. It's not a godly idea. It's not even a good idea. The idea is to have various sexual partners before you get married. That's not biblical. That's fornication, and it's sexual sin. And it's just as sexual sin as homosexuality. What I'm saying, my point in all of this is that today, you think you're called a fuddy-duddy or an old fogey because you take a stand that homosexuality is immoral, unnatural, and sinful. What do you think they're going to do with you when they find out you think it's just as sinful for two people to have sex outside of marriage? When that's like, well, even preachers do that. I mean, there are things that we're going to discover, especially about sexual sin, that Satan has some particular designs on, that you're going to get some information about coming up in judgment. And there's far more to it. It has nothing to do with God being a prude. By the way, I'm not going to do any by the ways on that. It's Mother's Day. Let's not go down that road. But you get my point. My point is, if they think that, I mean, heavens, the whole idea of the sexual sin that's going on that it hasn't got to do with homosexuality is just as big as problem. It's just as sinful. Now, I'm not saying that certain sin doesn't have certain repercussions to it. They do, but that's the truth of the matter. So it's going to be difficult as we begin choosing particular paths to follow and ways, and the way of the saints is going to become vigorously opposed. And you add to that mix the evil man, which is the evil man is basically the system of this world, the course that this world has been charted by the adversary and his policy of evil. But it really gets worse with this strange woman who takes in the whole religious realm of the whole thing to add into the mix the ungodly religion of the world. That has such attractiveness and allurements and those kinds of things with it. I just bring that up that you've got entirely different paths that a son is going to be tempted to make when you want to walk on this path, and the temptation is going to be there to get off of it. And I bring that up because this is the reason why I wanted to focus on this attention on this terminology here in these four verses. Before we go on to review some things there in the 139th Psalm, because the curriculum and what you're being told here is that in light of all of that opposition, the curriculum has the capacity and the power to keep that path and to preserve that way. That's the thing you are ever going to be in contact with. Kind of goes back to what Kenneth Blades was talking about. That's the thing that's going to be woven into who you are as a son and daughter. That's your ever point of contact, is the living word of the living God living in you. And a son having or a daughter having only their ears for their father. I'm saying that, I'm doing that because my father taught me that. That's why I'm doing it. Well, these decision-making skills and the skill acquisition that we get from it makes it so that we now are going to be confronted with having to, especially when it comes to judgment, but not just there. There's things right here in wisdom and justice that you can already experience. That's why I wanted you to be looking at that. That's why I gave you that handout so that you could, when you start to think about how your day is going to go with your father, that you can look on here and you can say, well, there's some things that my day is going to consist of here. I'm going to go to work, so I'm not going to be slothful in it. I'm going to be fervent in spirit and serve you. I'm going to, tax time already came and went, but there's other matters on here in which you're going to be dealing with one another as a body. You're going to be dealing with maybe giving to distributing the necessity of the saints, giving to hospitality to those lost people. All of these kinds of things in recompensing to no man evil for evil. You're going to be living a daily life of providing things honest in the sight of all men. These are all things that you have an opportunity to think your way through. And when you pray with your Father about some of these matters, and you kind of look over what your day is going to consist of, you can kind of pinpoint a couple of things here and say, well, here's what I intend to do today, and this is what you taught me to do, and this is why I'm doing it. I'm doing it this way, and say, I'm going to say what I say and do what I do because you taught me that. And then at first, it may be just a very few things. But as we get on, especially in a judgment, there's going to be many, many more that are going to come up, and there's going to be major moments that are going to arise where the searching of the heart is going to have to take place. So this is just the way life is lived. Life is not all clear-cut wisdom and justice or justice-type issues. But in connection with being, like you see on the board there, citizens of the country in which we live, in connection with being sometimes parents to children, being husband to a wife or wife to husband, you live your life as an employee to an employer, or as an employer to an employee. You live your life in connection with your neighbors and all sorts of other things. By the way, neighbors isn't just the person on the right and left side of your house. Your neighbor is basically, that word neighbor, we'll go over that, but that has a lot to do with the ones that are nearer to you at the time. Well, in view of all of those kind of ways in which your life is going to have an impact and have contact with all these issues and scenarios that go through what makes up life to you, you're supposed to choose a particular path to walk for those scenarios. And especially in judgment, those are your paths of judgment. You're to judge a particular path to walk. And your instruction by which you're to understand, like verse 9 says, righteousness and judgment and equity from the curriculum gives you the capacity, therefore, to know every good path. And that's the right terminology now. We're not at the point where we're approving things that are excellent. That comes later on in the curriculum. Right now, we're able to look and say, that's bad, that's good. And that's skill enough for now. And then we're going to get in judgment, that's good, that's better, that's best. Then when you get out into level 2, you're going to be able to say, well, that's good, that's better, that's best, but that's most excellent of all. And so you're going to be able to even get more skill in those kinds of discerning issues. And that's a big part of being a human being and being a son, being a daughter, being able to have that discernment. But you're going to be able to judge some particular paths to walk, and your instruction is going to give you the capacity to know it. Well, the point in this is, of course, that these are the kinds of things that sonship prayer is primarily composed of, especially at the beginning stages of your sonship life, choosing every good path, choosing type of capacity, decision-making skill on the basis of instruction and receiving those magnificent skills of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. You're going to be making some path-choosing choices. So at the beginning of your sonship life, that's really all God expects out of you right now. And really, that's all He really wants to hear out of you. And not that He gets aggravated. Don't think that, like I've said before, don't think that when you pray to God that if you say something wrong, He's going to roll His eyes or He's going to be upset or something like that, or say, why were you saying such a stupid thing like that? That's not the way your Father operates. He doesn't get aggravated if he hears something else, but it's just that's going to become the focus of your sonship prayers. And so in that bidirectional communication, you're going to start thinking about the skills it gives you in wisdom and justice so far, And when you then take it a step deeper and start thinking about particular decision making, where you're going to take a particular path of judgment, for example, and you take a particular scenario that is, I'm using particular because I'm not going to talk about specifics, but a scenario where your life is concerned, then you've got something that you and your father can talk about. You can describe to him the kind of path you're taking, why you're taking it, and by the description of that and what goes on in settled out in sonship prayer, it should make it apparent that, all right, this is what you've taught me, so this is how I'm going to do it. And if a searching of the heart should take place, there should be nothing that comes to mind. In fact, that's going to be what you're after. It's one of those kind of funny things, but what you're really after in the searching of the heart is nothing. You're looking for nothing brought to mind that would in any way indicate that there's any wickedness in it. We'll talk about that, but that's really what you're after, is that when you've laid it all out with your father pretty much is sitting there just shaking his head saying, yeah, that's good to go. And then by means of the curriculum, you're able to come along and say, if there's something wicked in it, you'd be able to look at that and say, all right, I'm going to do X, Y, Z. Oh, wait a minute. X, Y, Z isn't up there. So what would you conclude? My father didn't teach me X, Y, Z. But if you came up there and you said, all right, I'm under some trouble here. I'm going to rejoice in hope. I'm going to utilize the hope doctrine, be patient in it, and continue instant in prayer. That's what I'm going to do. And so you say, what do you think of that, Father? Well, I can see it's right there. That's exactly what I'd want you to do. So those are some of the things that we'll talk about when we get to the 139th Psalm. But for right now, this bidirectional communication skill is going to be about dealing with those kind of matters with your father and making those paths of judgment clear in your understanding and appreciation. So you take a particular scenario and come along and say, based upon what I know, what I've learned, I realize that this is the way I need to behave and conduct myself in this situation. Based upon this information, here's the way I should behave in light of that, and this much is clear to me, Father. But you may have a time where you would come along and say, I don't know that this other thing that's supposed to be happening tomorrow as I deal with my neighbor, for example, because we haven't gone over the ill issue of your neighbor, but I think this is in light of what I've just learned, how I would apply what I've just learned, but I just don't have any real certainty about it. So therefore, since I don't have these things so well-developed skills yet, or experience for making this easy transition from what is generally said and taught to me in the curriculum to the particular when it comes to applying that knowledge, I've come to the point where I just don't know what to say about this. I don't even know what to ask for. Well, that's the kind of situation that is described in Romans 8, 26 and 7. Where you don't know what to pray for as you ought. That's the kind of infirmities that Romans 8, 26, and 7 is talking about. And when you take all that and couple it with the fact that you do know how this is supposed to work, and you know the importance of sonship prayer, and you know that the Father's reciprocal response and bidirectional interaction to the prayer is that He's going to perform a searching of your heart based upon your judged assessment of how you ought to be applying the information to the situation. And through the effectual working of that information you're dealing with, you're either going to end up with a confirmation in your mind that it's the correct choice, or you've chosen a good and correct path, what is called here a good path, or you're going to receive the realization that really wasn't the best path. But when you run up against the infirmity of not knowing what to ask for your father as you ought because you lack the skill and the experience, all that becomes very discouraging. It becomes distressful and it becomes upsetting because you're not able to do your part, so to speak. And you fear the father can't do his part That's when the help of that Spirit comes in and the intercession is made. The Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. And he that searcheth the hearts knoweth what is the mind of the Spirit, because he maketh intercession for the saints according to the will of God. And on the basis of that, therefore, we know what we couldn't do has been done. And therefore, we can look for the response of confirmation just as if we had intellectually communicated it and made a request in supplication and conclude our prayer satisfactorily and with full contentment. Now, again, that's a little bit more delving back into what we went over when we went over that in Romans 8, 26 and 7. But it should make it so that you begin to perceive that what we're talking about some real, insightful, intelligent, perceptive communion and fellowship between you and your Father. And it's designed to include some perceptive, discerning requests and supplications on our part. And that's the norm of sonship prayer, by the way. That's the expected thing to happen. And that's going to constitute pretty much the kind of fellowship we're going to be having with our Father throughout the run of our sonship lives when it comes to making sonship decisions. But, like I say, in the beginning, at the outset, when we just are getting involved in areas of decision making, we're not only liable to have infirmities and not knowing what to pray for as we ought, but we're going to have them quite frequently. Well, what we ought to understand and appreciate by the review that we've done is why we should pray at all, kind of in general, what in general sonship prayer consists of. And by the way, that's far different from the way most Christians think of why they should pray. Almost never think of it in the subject of what their prayer life consists of. But we ought to also ought to have some appreciation, and we will when we go over it, for what the searching of our heart is, why our Father needs to do that, and then have a pretty good frame of reference, hopefully because of what we went over several sessions ago, for what the infirmities are that we would have and how we get the help. So I think what we're going to do is, again, because of Mother's Day and everything, that takes me now to saying what I wanted to say to get to the searching of the heart issue in the 139th Psalm. Well, let's deal with one thing out of that 139th Psalm. Now, like I say, if you're sitting there with questions on some of these things, this is just a scant review. We went into great detail on, like I mentioned before, the kind of confirming in your inner man that is designed to take place. We'll maybe touch on that some more with the searching of the heart, because there is a confirmation that is designed to take place in your heart. And it isn't the old idea of, I just got peace about it. That can be, you know, I could eat a steak and feel like I just got peace over something. That's just peaceful. But anyway, we may deal with those issues as they come up. But come back to the 139th Psalm here for just a few minutes before we end today. One of the things that we can kind of work on here in just a few minutes is that what I'm going to do this time that I didn't do last time, when we went over the 139th Psalm last time, like I said, it matters a big deal that we were not in the curriculum. Now we are. So what I want to do in the next several Bible classes in dealing with the 139th Psalm is dealing with it from the inside out instead of the outside in. And so the way we're going to approach this now is, having gotten wisdom and justice, looking at getting judgment, How do we understand this now that all we could do is talk about it in theory before, but now it's going to be in reality where the rubber meets the road? And we're going to look at it in some of the components that make it up here. And one of the things I want to just address right at the outset is that most of the time this is a psalm written by David. It's a psalm that has real serious application to the members of the remnant of Israel who are going to be able to receive their adoption of sons out here. They're going to look back and they're going to pick up that 139th Psalm, and they're going to be able to make some particular applications to their enemies out here that get described near the end of the 139th Psalm as David was looking at them himself. But what I'm after is that one of the things that the 139th Psalm is most oftentimes taught about and spoken about, and every time it's preached about, is that this is a psalm that extols the omnipotence and the omniscience of God. And there's some really familiar verses in this particular psalm. One of them is down there in verse 14. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. You'll hear that a lot. Well, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. It's like you get most anybody who does something, wants to live a particular lifestyle that is totally flies in the face of the Bible, they'll use that, they cop out where they say, well, I believe in God and God makes no mistakes. Well, that's the dumbest logic I ever heard. He didn't make any mistakes, but you did. And I do. So what's the problem? Problem in with God. God made me this way. God made me that way. God, that idea that God made all, when they try to cop it out by saying God made me that way. Well, the truth of the matter is God didn't make you that way. God made you sinlessly perfect in the Garden of Eden, and it was your stupid ancestor who decided that he would fly in the face of God's will. He sinned, and now we're all identified with him, and we have a nature of sin that we all have. So we're all that way. So why do you think yours is any better than mine? They all stink. My sin nature stinks. And thank God he could do something about it and not have to use that nature of sin. But anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent. I said I was going to get you out here on time. You have passages in here. Look how it starts out. Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down sitting, my uprising. We're going to talk about some of the details of this coming up. Thou understandest my thought afar off. There you go. Well, there's God's his omniscience reading your mind. Well, as God, he does know those things omnisciently. I'm not saying he doesn't, but that's not what David is excited about here. Thou compass my path and my lying down. And here's a word that comes up in this psalm that makes it very difficult for those to say that this is a psalm talking about God's omniscience and how he omnisciently already knows everything about you. And it's this word in verse 3, and art acquainted with all my ways. It's that word, acquainted. Now, if God is operating on omniscience, he doesn't get acquainted with anybody. Acquaintance means that when you say, well, it's nice to make your acquaintance, what are you by definition saying that person, their status or relationship with you is? Huh? You don't already know them. They don't already know you. You had to get acquainted in order for them to know something about you. That's what David is extolling here as an example that was sitting there. Well, let's go back to that one. At the time in which David and Solomon was raised up, that's why on the chart up here, you see a space between the first and second courses of punishment, because David was raised up and received the Davidic covenant as a preview of coming attractions. Actually, it's going to take place out here when this kingdom gets established on this earth. And one of the things is sonship. And that's why David and Solomon are chosen, are picked out there as the examples of that. And one of the things that David was able to do was be an example of how this is going to operate when he says, even though he says, you have searched me and known me and knowest my downset, you understand my thoughts afar off, but he says, you are acquainted with all my ways. And this is one of those techniques of our English language where you read along a little bit and then a sentence occurs and it begins with the word for, and it's almost like without even being aware of it, you could almost say why. And it's a technique of older English and the excellency of older English to be able to prompt that question. But it's prompted at verse 4. Let me read it again. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsitting, mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. 4. Now, what after the word ways, it begs the question, why? In other words, David has just enumerated several things about the Lord, and now he's going to state why. Why is it? How is it that you have known me? How is it that you understand all these things? How is it that you are acquainted with all my ways? Why? Verse 4. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. That's how the Lord knew all those things. David was incessantly talking with him. David told him all those things. That's how the Lord knew about it. He knew all of David's heart. And it's not a bad expression at all. We hear it used a lot today and over-abused. But this idea of pouring your heart out, David would do that all the time. He poured his heart out to the Lord. He knew all the details about David because David had told him all of them. He knew him so well that there was no place on this earth or under this earth that David could ever go that God would not know about him, because David would be always in communication with him. Far from this being a psalm, and see if between now and Wednesday as you read down through it, far from being a psalm that extols God's omniscience, this is a psalm that actually extols what is known between a father and a son when that communication is going wide open. And that's how all these things are sorted out and known. Well, we're going to take, with just that, we're going to take some time beginning on Wednesday. And like I say, I doubt if we're going to get it all in on Wednesday, but the last few things we're going to do in the last several Bible classes before we return to judgment is to look at some details of this 139th Psalm and the searching of the heart, which is going to be a big part of what's going to be taking place as you determine the paths of judgment and every good path. And so that when you determine those things, you would have your heart searched, you know what your part in it is, you know what your Father's part in it is, you know what the answer you're looking for is, and you know when to say amen, that it's been done. And you have absolute confidence, that's the path I'm going to take. Or you have absolute confidence, that's not the path I'm going to take. Well, I think we'll stop right there and let you get to your Mother's Day celebrations. But this is a great chapter, the 139th Psalm, and I think we're going to be able to have some great things to say about it. And I know we haven't done it. I was going to do questions, but if you have questions, just think about those things, and we'll entertain those as we conclude the 139th Psalm. So we'll stop right there, and we'll pick it up on Wednesday night with our heads bowed. Heavenly Father, we thank you again for this day and for